Welcome to Agency of the Month, National Park Service, sponsored by Siemens on Federal News Radio. Each week, we talk to agency principals about agency achievements and best practices in meeting mission goals and standards. Now your host, Tom Temin.
With hundreds of facilities throughout the United States, the National Park Service has a big energy and water bill. It's been using energy savings performance contracts to cut that bill. I discussed this with Doug Jacobs, the Deputy Associate Regional Director for Lands, Planning, and Design, and with spokeswoman Jenny Anzalmo Sarles. Jacobs describes the unusual challenges facing an agency where so many of its facilities are outdoors.
The Park Service is sort of unique in that a lot of our energy consumption is in landscapes as opposed to in facilities, that we are very landscape rich, we're facility poor. And so our landscapes are also very special and very sensitive landscapes. A lot of them are designed landscapes or what we call cultural landscapes. So we use an awful lot of energy for lighting, an awful lot of energy for water.
What about vehicles too? Lawnmowers and ATVs and so forth.
Of course, yes.
But there are buildings also.
There are buildings as well. We do have quite a number of facilities and structures in addition. They tend to be smaller types of facilities, however.
Do you have any idea, is there knowledge of the total bill for different forms of energy across the Park Service yearly?
I don't have those figures in front of me, but what we did do was when we entered into this contract was that we had the contractor look at all of our energy bills across the entire region and help us determine, where we were spending extra money that, beyond what they would expect in terms of facilities of our size.
Okay, give us some examples of what they found.
Well, certainly. What they found was that, in fact, we were using a lot of energy for site lighting, for lighting of monuments and memorials. They found that we were using an awful lot of water, particularly with our fountains and a lot of our irrigation systems. What is interesting also in terms of the water is that we have miles and miles and miles of water lines. And so they were able to go through our water bill, which is actually about 22 pages long, look at all of those, look at what we were using, look at what they expected that we ought to be using, and they were able to identify a large number of leaks that we didn't know about that we were able to go back and fix. Found an instance where we were paying an awful lot of the bill for the Pentagon.
Wow.
And so, of course, by adding some meters here and there, we were making sure that we were only paying for the water that the Park Service was using. They were able to focus us in on a lot of the easy fixes that would really save us a lot of water and a lot of energy.
With respect to lighting the monuments, I mean, how can you not do that? A lot of people do visit, especially in D.C., at night.
I think lighting of the monuments and memorials and what we've found through this energy-saving performance contract is pretty interesting and scientifically driven. And so what we've been able to do is our contractor has come in and they said, we're using these old bulbs that aren't as efficient, but they create a special tone. These monuments and memorials that the National Park Service takes care of have such a special feeling. They tell an important story. And so that tone was really important for us to maintain. And so they tested some scenarios out. They brought in LED bulbs, and we went from 80 watts down to like 8 watts of electricity usage in lighting the monuments and memorials. They came in, and we were thinking that, oh, we're dropping the wattage here a lot. It's going to be hard to illuminate. It's going to be hard for people to see as well as they do now. But what we found is we actually had to drop that back even further because of these brighter, more efficient bulbs. And so our goal with this project is for visitors not to see any difference. And so I think that's one of the examples that demonstrates something a little bit unique about the National Park Service from some of our other federal peers, that we're thinking about that visitor experience and what story we're charged with telling and the places that we're protecting. And so it's not as simple as just switching an LED light bulb in for an older bulb, we really need to think about how that changes the place and that experience.
Yeah, because some of these new forms of lighting make everything look like a morgue, and you don't want to do that.
Right.
That happened in my kitchen. All right, so let's back up for a moment, though, and get back to the bigger story here. So the Park Service decided to embark on an energy and really utility, you might say, a program, if you include right. water in that. Mm-hmm. And you decided to go an unorthodox route, I guess, which was the energy saving contract. So how did this program all come together?
Right. So basically, the Energy Savings Performance Contracts, ESPC for short, that is a Department of Energy initiative. These are IDIQ, indefinite quantity contracts that they have pre-competed. And did some research into that program. We looked at some of their contractors that were already, you know, that had been qualified. We interviewed them and came up with, you know, selected the contractor that we felt was, you know, the best fit for us. And that contractor has been fabulous. Basically, what their first order of business was to survey all of our facilities across the region and identify good places for potential energy savings.
The same contractor could look at water and also at electricity?
Absolutely. They brought in the...
So this was not the utilities and the power companies right. themselves?
Correct. So they brought in whatever experts that they needed in order to be able to look at each type of utility. And one of the first things that we realized was that, and I alluded to this before, that most of our facilities tend to be fairly small, whereas the ESPC contracts tend to look at much larger facilities. And so we realized that just doing a small, ESPC project at each of our parks really wasn't going to be all that cost effective. It was going to be really hard to manage. And so we are fortunate in that we're the smallest region in the Park Service. We're the National Capital Region. Most, you can get to any one of our parks within about 2 hours. And so we realize, hey, we really need to look collectively across the entire region and identify all of the potential projects that make sense going forward. Let's pool all of those projects into a single contract. We get a lot more efficiency that way. But what it also does is that it allows us to, you know, sort of collect all of the potential savings in order to, you know, pay for new projects. But then we could look at implementing projects across multiple parks that, for instance, we might be saving most of the energy at the National Mall and Memorial Parks, since that's the largest park. But we certainly have a lot of battlefield parks that are much smaller that certainly have needs as well. And so it allowed us to be able to sort of bank, if you will, these savings and be able to distribute them to our most significant needs across the region throughout multiple parks.
We're speaking with Doug Jacobs, Deputy Associate Regional Director for Lands Planning and Design, and Jenny Anzamo Sarles, Media Relations Specialist at the National Park Service. And let me ask about the structure of these contracts. You have probably multiple utilities feeding the different parks. So how does one contract work across all of those different entities that actually feed the water and electricity in?
Mm-hmm. So basically, what is great about the ESPC contract is that all of this is based upon guaranteed savings. And so they have looked at the potential savings. First of all, they benchmarked the amount of energy we were using in all of our parks for all of our various systems. Then they looked at the projected savings for all of those, and figured it out per utility, and gave us expected savings on each of those. And so what is great also is that they will be monitoring those after the projects are implemented. They come back year after year to make sure that we are achieving those savings for each type of utility, and they help us monitor the billing to make sure that we are achieving those savings. If for some reason we are not, it's actually on the contractor to go back and make whatever adjustments are necessary to be able to get us back to those consumption levels that they guaranteed.
The contracts through an energy saving performance contract requires no upfront capital investment by the agency. The contractor has to guarantee those savings, and so it's in their interest to ensure it's successful. And so it's helpful when we're trying to address such a large spectrum of energy use across any variety of utilities. And so that burden lands with the contractor rather than the agency.
Jenny Anselmo Sarles is a National Park Service spokeswoman, and Doug Jacobs is the Deputy Associate Regional Director for Lands, Planning, and Design. In part two of my interview, Jacobs and Sarles outline some of the recognition the Park Service has gotten and some of the new technologies in lighting you might even have seen yourself. I'm Tom Temin.
As the National Park Service celebrates its 100th anniversary this month, it's taking important steps to protect and preserve our nation's most historic sites for future generations. Siemens, as part of an innovative contract with the National Park Service, is installing energy and water conservation measures that will make iconic monuments, memorials, and historic battlefields in the D.C. area more environmentally sustainable while saving taxpayer dollars. Siemens is committed to sustainability and has pledged to make its own operations carbon neutral by 2030.
A combination of smart management and new technology is transforming how the National Park Service consumes electricity, fuel, and water. They've been using an energy savings performance contract in the D.C. region to try out these ideas. I discussed this with Doug Jacobs, the Deputy Associate Regional Director for Lands, Planning, and Design, and with spokeswoman Jenny Anselmo Sarles. Jacobs says the results from the work have gotten some recognition.
We just found out earlier this month that we have been awarded the Federal Energy and Water Management Award, which is actually a nationwide award that is managed by the Department of Energy. And so they recognize people that have made significant contributions to energy and water, contributions to significant water and energy savings. And we were recognized for our innovative approach in contracting.
Who is the contractor, by the way?
The contractor is Siemens Government Technologies.
And how does this fit in with overall Interior Department efforts?
The National Capital Region's ESPC is actually the largest energy-saving performance contract among all nine bureaus within the Department of Interior. And as you may know, the Department of Interior is one of the largest departments in the country.
Let's talk about some of the innovations that the contractor came up with. Earlier, Doug, you mentioned that there was water savings just by looking for leaks and plugging those, and also metering so that you're not helping drinking fountains inside the Pentagon, which is kind of interesting how the plumbing must run around here right. in Washington. But what are some of the things that are interesting that they came up with?
Well, I think our new approach on lighting the Washington Monument is very interesting, that with what we're doing, we basically are reducing the energy consumption to light the Washington Monument by 80%. Now, we had been reluctant to go down the path of LEDs for lighting on the Washington Monument, because in the past, the technology had not been great in terms of the color rendition of LED fixtures. They tended to be very intense lights that were not dimmable. And so it's only within the last few years that the technology has improved in such a manner that we can get a much warmer light, that we can really focus the light very directly. We can reduce the intensity to the level that is required. And as you can imagine, having just the right lighting level on the Washington Monument is very, very important.
Does the light level vary, say, by weather conditions and time of year?
Actually, it does not. But what is very important to us is that we have a very consistent color, a very consistent spread. The light levels relative to other memorials is very important. That is the most brightly lit memorial on the Mall, followed by the Lincoln and the Jefferson, and then of course the Capitol building. What is also great about the LED fixtures is they have much a longer lifespan. They'll last for about 10 years, and in that whole time they won't dim, whereas the existing systems that we have sort of change color over time, and they do dim. So
the searchlight type of technology,
yes, more or less. So when we did a mock-up actually out there to see what one of these would look like, we lit one corner of the monument and kept the other three lit, with the traditional lights that we had up there. We pulled in members of the Commission of Fine Arts to come and take a look at it. And surprisingly, none of us could tell which one was the new fixtures.
Wow.
And
because you didn't want the thing to look like a giant icicle with cold lighting.
We did not, absolutely. We were able to reduce the number of fixtures. we were able to, we had to dim them down. And so, in fact, we're using just a very small percentage of the lighting of the wattage on this. And we're saving just on the Washington Monument itself about $16,000 a year just on the light bill just for that monument.
Yeah, that's a new truck somewhere that needs it. Yeah,
absolutely. And similarly, when we were putting in a mock-up for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, we did a mock-up on those, and we realized that the LED lights actually provide a much more even spread of lighting. And since that memorial has been in place, it's been very hard to read the names at the bottom of the memorial. Mm-hmm. And actually, with these new LED fixtures, we are able to get the light very even all the way to the top, all the way to the bottom, and it really is improving the visitor experience.
And what about the Capitol building? Any plans to change the lighting there? The savings could be even greater than the monument potential.
Well, I hope that they will look at that. They are managed by the architect of the Capitol, and so that's a different federal agency. But, they're certainly opportunities for them to investigate.
We'll make sure they hear this and they'll go ahead and do that.
We talked a lot about water savings earlier, and one way we're doing that, a lot of these things, changing bulbs, fixing leaks, these are things we can all do in our homes. And what we're doing is just on such a large magnitude and applying it in government. And so we're taking smart sprinkler systems on the Ellipse, so just south of the White House. These smart sprinklers are able to read the temperature, they use historical weather data, and they measure the moisture in the soil to decide when they should water the Ellipse. And so we're conserving energy, not watering in the heat of the day. If the sprinklers are able to sense and reading into the data from historical weather and patterns that on July 27th or August 8th of 2016, we expect it to be 97 degrees at 3 p.m., they're going to try and use that information to water at 2 a.m. or 7 a.m., whatever provides the best moisture content without evaporation.
Also, solar panels is something that is coming into the national parks. Can you do that in a way that doesn't spoil the looks of the buildings?
That's a great question. And one of the biggest challenges for us is how do we install solar panels on historic buildings or in historic landscapes where that view shed, what you see, is part of what we're protecting. We've been able to install them on some of our smaller buildings that are not public facilities, that are more out of the way. So we've installed them on National Park Service office buildings at Manassas National Battlefield Park. We've installed them on maintenance facilities for the National Mall and Memorial Parks. In fact, one of those systems we expect is about to start giving back to the grid. And then at Monocacy National Battlefield, as we speak, we're in the process of installing solar panels on both their maintenance facility and the first public facility, the Visitor Center. And if you travel up to Frederick, Maryland and visit Monocacy National Battlefield, you go into the Visitor Center, there will be a display inside the Visitor Center where you can look at the savings generated by the photovoltaic system and learn about the impacts of that and that reduction in energy.
Jenny Anselmo Sarles is National Park Service spokeswoman, and Doug Jacobs is the Deputy Associate Regional Director for Lands, Planning, and Design. I'm Tom Temin.
Siemens, under an innovative contract with the National Park Service, will install cutting-edge energy and environmental technology at our nation's treasures to upgrade aging infrastructure, decrease energy consumption, save money, and help meet federal mandates for energy efficiency. On the National Mall, Siemens has installed sprinklers with tiny sensors that monitor the soil so the grass does not get thirsty. And new LED lights installed by Siemens at the Washington Monument and other memorials consume up to 80% less energy than existing systems.
We're speaking with Doug Jacobs, Deputy Associate Regional Director for Lands, Planning, and Design, and Jenny Anselmo Sarles, spokesperson for the National Park Service. Is the World War II Memorial come under your purview?
It does.
And that's got a lot of lighting and a lot of water.
It does.
Unfortunately, people in the water, which is not really something you can address with an energy savings contract, but there's a lot of lighting opportunities there also.
There absolutely are, and actually quite a lot of the fixtures there have been burnt out, and so this is an opportunity for us to not only be reducing energy, but replacing a lot of our problematic lamps with lamps that are going to have a much longer longer life expectancy.
And there's a labor savings there, too, if you don't have to replace lamps so much.
Labor savings as well as cost of you know, not having to buy lamps as frequently.
So what are the plans now to take this nationwide for the Park Service? It sounds like as a crucible, the National Capital Region has kind of proven itself.
There are a few other national parks throughout the country that have explored this, and there are a few that have initiated their own energy-saving performance contract, but we're in a unique position in the D.C. area because of our geographic proximity, and I think we're a bit of a test case for how we can be successful. As Doug talked about at the beginning, most of our energy consumption is in landscapes and historic structures. And so that's a bit of a unique challenge. The Energy Saving Performance Contract program is really set up for buildings that people occupy 8 hours a day or 12 hours a day that are lit, that people are actively using that space all day long. And they're big buildings. They're over 5,000 square feet. In the National Park Service, most of our office spaces are under 5,000 square feet. And by the nature of our work, people out in the field doing, monitoring wildlife, taking care of roads, you know, managing a national park is like managing a city. It's being a superintendent of a national park is like being a mayor of a town or a city council, responsible for water and wastewater systems, responsible for roads and trails, responsible for housing, you name it. And so because of that difference from many of our federal peers, this is a bit of a test case to see how we can also be successful. And Siemens has been great to work with our unique challenges in the National Park Service.
But outside of the National Capital Region, you don't have the concentration of numbers of facilities that you do here.
We don't have the concentration within geographic proximity.
But could this work in a place like Yosemite or Yellowstone or one of the big, big
absolutely.
Places.
Absolutely. And in
Grand
fact, we have been asked, several times to come out and talk about our lessons learned and our approach with other colleagues at other parks in some of our annual meetings where we get together with, you know, folks from other regions. Whereas, you know, their regions are much larger and more spread out, they're, in some situations, they do have a few parks that are within closer proximity, or even in some of the larger parks, they do have more facilities that they can look at. Well, the lesson really here is just looking as broadly as possible within, you know, a geographic region that makes sense. And certainly they are seeing the successes that we have had. We implemented all of these within the last year. We're already seeing the savings coming in. We were able to implement faster, ahead of schedule, actually. There was a lot of concern about, you know, because there were so many players involved in so many different parks that might be a challenge. But we were able to pull that off, basically. So I think that it has been very successful, and I think it is a model for other parks across the service.
And this has allowed us to address some of the National Park Service's nearly $12 billion maintenance backlog across the country. And so in the National Capital Region, since there was no upfront capital investment through an ESPC, we're able to tackle some of that deferred maintenance that we can't address with our base budget.
Jenny Anselmo Sarles is National Park Service spokeswoman, and Doug Jacobs is the Deputy Associate Regional Director for Lands, Planning, and Design. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Agency of the Month, featuring National Park Service, sponsored by Siemens. The entire show is available on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month. Agency of the Month, Fridays at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 a.m.